First case for argument, American Land Holdings versus Job. Mr. Kelly.
May it please the court, my name is Dan Kelly. I represent the owners of coal pursuant to the 1903 mineral severance deed. The question before the court, the central question, is a question of law having to do with the meaning of that one-page document. The applicable law is but one case, Consolidated Coal Company versus Muchman. That case is much more than one case. It's actually 116 coal deeds separated into five sets where the court went through various of the principles that are applicable here. The coal deed in question, the 1903, and I'm saying coal deed, it's actually a mineral severance deed, granted all the coals.
You know, it seems to me that the 1903 deed granted two different types of surface rights to the coal company. The first was a right to purchase land to erect certain structures or buildings that were necessary, in quotes, to carry on the business of mining. The second surface right was to allow, and again, in quotes, things like test holes, ventilation holes, the appellants don't wish to erect mining and transporting structures, nor do they wish to use the surface for things like test holes and ventilation holes. So why doesn't this very specific language limit the use of the land for either mining-related structures or test holes and vent holes?
Well, to begin with, those specific agreements do not limit the conveyance of all the coals. And the question becomes,
forgive me, but a deed may grant rights to all of the coal, but be unambiguous about reserving all the surface rights for farming. In this case, seems to me all the coal means all the coal company can mine while still maintaining the surface. In other words, all the coal is not the language that limits or grants surface rights, but rather it's the specific language about surface rights limits or grants of surface rights. And in this case, the surface rights are limited to erecting structures and digging test and ventilation holes.
And coal mines. Essentially, to operate and do all those things necessary for a coal mine. And that's within the agreement to sell.
So really, aren't you saying that this severance deed is a conveyance in fee to the whole property? Because you'll, by virtue of your argument, you'll get the houses, you'll get everything.
We're saying that the agreement or the conveyance is the conveyance of all the minerals, including the coal. There is an appurtenant agreement to sell the surface as necessary for coal mining operations. And to answer her honest question.
So for 30 extra bucks an acre, you get the fee.
Which
there's nothing left after you're done.
Which was about double the price of the minerals. So
Could you repeat? I'm sorry. I was rattling my papers. I didn't hear
yes.
what you said. I'm sorry.
I said, and at the time, that was almost, again, the price of the coal. In other words, 30 bucks an acre for the minerals, 30 bucks an acre.
Well, could you exercise this option and then decide you didn't want to do strip mining and wanted to build a hotel instead?
Well, once there's a conveyance.
Answer my question, yes or no.
Yes. Not
that's
very what, soon
that
after.
That strikes me as preposterous, I must say.
Not very soon after. But once we got the fee.
I don't know what you mean by not soon after.
I would think
I asked you a simple question. If you exercise the option, can you build a hotel instead of doing strip mining?
No.
And you said yes.
You could not at the time of the exercise of the option.
Why not?
Because you can only exercise the option as reasonably necessary to
Well, it wouldn't be reasonably necessary. You couldn't do strip mining without exercising the option, without, you know, plowing up the farms and so on, destroying the houses. But having exercised the option, could you then change your mind and say, well, actually, you know, there are better things to do with this land than strip mining. We'll build a hotel.
My answer to that question, first, is you could not exercise the option for that reason. And my once it's exercised...
the option because it's necessary for strip mining.
Once you exercise the option and get the fee...
strip mine?
Pardon, sir?
Once you exercise the option, you have to strip mine? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think there's a contractual commitment to that effect.
Well,
once
if
you
it's
get
not
the fee,
a contractual commitment, why can't you build a hotel instead?
My answer is that if you did it very soon after, I think the conveyance could be attacked.
On what ground?
On the ground that you didn't exercise it for the real reason of doing a surface mine, as a matter of fact, or for a coal mining operation. If there were no coal mining operation ready or about to go into place at the time you exercised that option, I don't think you could exercise it.
What's the principle involved here that governs the... what you can do with your option?
I think
it's related to Judge Tinder's question, whether your proposition is that you can simply, for $30, obtain fee simple to this acreage.
If it is necessary for mining operations,
it's necessary. You can't do strip mining without stripping off the surface. So it is necessary for strip mining. No question about it.
All right.
But it's a different question whether that would be your actually intended use.
Well, our intended use, again, if we did not have a mining operation going at the time, I don't see how we could exercise it.
Going at the time, you don't have... you're not strip mining this land at the time. It's a matter of what you intend to do.
Yes, and...
and the question is, do you have to actually strip mine once you've exercised the option, or can you change your mind?
I think you have to have a strip mine in place, ready
to
go.
Well, obviously not. The strip mine is not in place in the land which you're about to take over, obviously. It's next door.
In all probability, there would be a huge preparation plant somewhere. In all probability, there would be a drag line having been purchased. It would be right over the hill. You could see it.
Well, you're not going to make the preparations before you exercise the option, are you?
Your Honor, with the surface mine is probably...
You haven't made your preparations yet for this, have you?
We are within 100 feet to the north, east, and
I
west.
I know, but you haven't made preparations to strip mine this area.
Well, we can't get on that. We have made preparations to strip mine everything about that 63 acres. You can see two drag lines. You can see a railroad track we put in. There's no question about, are we going to strip mine in that area?
I'm interested in what you think your right is, whether you think you have a right to exercise the option, and then do whatever you want with the land.
I do not think we have the right to exercise the option and do whatever we want with the land. I think we have to show when we exercise the option the present intent, capacity, and wherewithal to strip mine this property.
Yeah, but in the back of your mind, you've got a whole other idea going on. Listen, suppose I execute a deed in favor of my neighbor, granting her the option to buy my side yard for purposes of gardening for her complete enjoyment, the restriction to run with the land, okay?
Yes.
But once she buys the land, she uses it to build a go-kart racetrack because she claims that is the only way she can get complete enjoyment from her land. Which language would restrict her right? Would it be for her complete enjoyment or for purposes of gardening?
I think if at the time she exercises that option, she has the intent to garden it. And if she were to die tomorrow and it goes to her son, I think he could do anything with it he wants. I think if she exercises for purposes of gardening and the day after that she puts in a racetrack, she's in big trouble.
You know, if we take your set of facts where the trial court found the coal to be worth $183,920,000 and you're going to be able to buy it for $90 from the homeowner.
Oh, Your Honor, we've already bought
it. If there was a son, I think he would murder his mother.
I would merely say that we have, and I'm apparently running into extra time, but this coal severance deed in 1903, the coal and all the minerals were purchased.
I'm puzzled by the fact that there's no time limitation on the exercise of the option.
It is pertinent to the sale of the coal. It vests at the time of the sale of a coal. It's not in gross, and it does not violate the rule against perpetuities.
Well, forget the rule against perpetuities. I don't understand the logic of having indefinite indefinite options. Doesn't it really muck up any system of property rights to have such a cloud over the property?
My answer to the question is that it is a pertinent to the severance of the minerals.
What if strip mining had become very rare? And nevertheless, anyone who owned this land and wanted to develop it in some expensive fashion, like the racetrack or the hotel, would worry that, you know, who knows, sometime someone is going to come along, you can have a $50 million racetrack, and someone comes along and says, you know, I'm going to do a little strip mining here, and I'll give you $30 for your racetrack. So, you know, it'd be just obviously an extortion situation. I don't understand why there isn't some reasonable time limitation on the exercise of these options.
My answer is that it is pertinent to the.
That's not an answer. That's not an expert. What's the logic of having these eternal clouds on a title of land?
The answer is that to the extent that His Honor's question is correct, that it's a cloud as opposed to a benefit to mine the resources, and I think you could reasonably take either position. I think the answer to that is the legislature can try and cure it if they don't like it. And they did with the Dormant Mineral Act. And in Indiana, the policy behind the Dormant Mineral Act is if you have rights to coal and you have pertinent rights to purchase, they're valid as long as you use them. And here the trial court found we had used them. We'd paid taxes since 1920s. So.
Well, you haven't. You haven't. I don't understand. You haven't sought to use this property until recently.
Under the statute, we've used it by paying property taxes on the coal, and that's the Dormant Mineral Act issue that's in this case that the trial court found that we, in fact, had used it as required by the statute.
Well, it's not use. You've paid a fee, in effect, to keep your option alive. You haven't used the coal, obviously.
And I spoke of using the coal in the words of the statute.
You're not using the coal. They use English, not legalese.
Okay. We are preserving
to preserve your option.
We are preserving the fact that we own the property. And I think going back to his Honor's issue about.
Well, now you're saying you're owning it? You've owned it since 1903? What are you talking about?
We have owned the coal with pertinent rights as mining. And the option to buy is no different than any of the other mining rights. They're all pertinent rights. And we have owned that since 1920 and paid taxes on that. And according to the legislature, to answer his honest question about a cloud, that is sufficient for there not to be a cloud on that title.
You pay a tax on the coal that you haven't mined?
Yes, Your Honor.
How is the tax computed?
Just as any property, real estate property tax.
You pay on the right to get the coal, though. Isn't that what that act is about?
No, Your Honor. We own the coal in place pursuant to this coal severance deed. The entire bottom of that land below the surface was severed in 1903. We own that area and the minerals. And we have paid real property taxes on that estate.
You're not paying according to the quantity of coal.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You're not paying according to the quantity of coal.
It is assessed by the county assessor in the same way that the assessment is made with respect to my house or
That's not a coal tax.
No, it's a property tax, Your Honor. It's the same property tax.
I thought you said you're using the coal as.
In the words of the statute.
So, in other words, the state of Indiana is getting property taxes from the homeowners and from you on
the same
piece of land.
With two estates, the mineral estate and the surface estate. And the answer is on his question about the cloud. This is not just a property right. This is ownership of the coal in place that is entitled to as much respect and deference as is the owner of the separate estate with respect to the surface.
Do you borrow against the coal, or do you sell the coal to others before removal?
You could mortgage it just like any other piece of property. I mean, the clients have not. I mean, Peabody's putting a mine in. And to answer his honest question about are they going to change to a golf course, there's a brand-new 18-mile railroad track. There are two drag lines that are worth $50 million, and you can see them right off the front of the property. There is over $100 million invested to be able to do a surface mine in this area.
And the surrounding area. You're on the march.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, we're talking thousands of acres.
But you didn't invest this money in order to be able to mine this particular property, because you didn't know whether you had a right to it.
It was not that we knew. It was that we owned the coal. We thought we had a right to buy the surface.
You wouldn't spend $100 million without...
At some point, though, there's a question of how many open windows can you have in a reserve where you have two drag lines that go very slowly. So we anticipated that we could get the 63 acres. If we can't get it, we're going to mine around it. And we're about ready to mine around it. And that coal will never come out of the ground, ever, once we go by. And it is something that we own. We own the estate.
Yeah, okay. You think you own it.
We own it. That's the peculiarity of this Mutchman case. They decide the coal based upon... they decide this whole issue based upon the ownership of the coal.
You have overread that case.
All right.
Does your interpretation of the deed read surface rights out of the contract? In other words, do these landowners here actually own anything in your view?
The landowners actually own the surface, period.
So they own $30 worth of surface land.
They own the surface subject to a right to purchase that is at $30. There's an interesting footnote in Consal Mutchman. I think it's footnote 3, and it's on toward the end of the opinion where they say that the issue of actual payment for the option is not before us, so we don't have to consider an equitable price. Now, what the court was ready to do, I'm not certain. Other courts in the same situation all over the country, I shouldn't say all over the country, at least three courts throughout the country have said in these situations that while the equities of the price is to be determined at the time of the conveyance, equity will take over this option and say that the coal company has to pay market value for the surface at this time. He who seeks equity must do equity, all those sorts of principles. So,
you know what? I'm really mixed up. Are you saying that it's equitable to pay these people $30 or $90?
No, I'm saying whether...
And you're doing equity? Is that what you're telling
no,
me?
No, I'm saying the court would do equity.
Well, I don't
understand.
Think
we'll say that you can have...
No, I don't think you would.
$183 million worth of coal for $30?
No,
that's equity?
Well, no, Your Honor, because we own the $130 million worth of coal.
$183.
Or $180, however you might want to value it. We own the coal estate.
So what is this stuff about court redoing the price? What are you talking about?
There are courts in these situations with old options to purchase that run with the land that redo the price at the point as to the market value at the point in time the court orders the conveyance.
So we could say, are you saying that we could say to you in a few weeks when our head's clear that you have to pay the owners of these land $180 million and you'll make $3 million?
No, Your Honor.
No.
Market value of the surface, which would be about certainly less than $1,000 an acre.
You mean the current market value for a farm or for a residence is what you're saying?
Yes. I'm not using the word farm, but a current market value of surface property in that area. A surface property without...
Without strip mining.
No, without the coal estate. They do not own the coal estate. The coal
assumption would be there's no coal there. That would be the assumption. And then the court would... Are they? I can ask them. Are they asking for that as some alternative relief, that they get the current...
They haven't asked for that. No, Your Honor.
And just as a footnote...
But an Indiana court would order that, or...
I think the Indiana court has the power to do that, and I think that's the footnote reference in Mutchman 1.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the for poor land per acre in Indiana, it's $3,351 an acre, and for top quality land, $4,994 an acre.
With or without, is that a surface estate? With or without the mineral estate?
Surface rights to the
property. That's without the
I suspect so. In certain parts of the country, and particularly in southwestern Indiana, where this situation that we're talking about is not an unusual situation. Almost all of the mineral estates in the eastern part of Sullivan County were severed pursuant to deeds like this in the 1900s.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you.
Am I precluded from coming back?
Well, we'll give you another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you want to come back?
May it please the court. My name is Jeff Cobb, and I represent what's known as the Job defendants. And the trial court, in our opinion, correctly applied the Mutchman case to the 1903 deed in determining it was ambiguous because, like the deeds in Mutchman, it contains a limitation on the use of the surface and references to damages to the surface, and then took extrinsic evidence to determine that it clearly referred only to underground mining.
So did any of the Mutchman deeds contain restrictions on mining under and near buildings?
Yes, they did. In fact, they had a wide range of different deeds, some that said all coal and nothing more, and they were unambiguous, but some that had limitations for 5 acres around buildings, some that said you had to pay damages if you damaged the surface. So then 116 deeds, they had quite a few. But one distinguishing factor would be in Mutchman, those deeds were all late 1928. And so when the second case came down about the extrinsic evidence, it was clear that strip mining existed in the area at that time. This 1903 deed is at a time when strip mining could not have been possible. And as a result, the intent of the grantors, which is always the goal in a construction of a deed, could not have been for the surface
mining. It would not have been feasible there, or would had not been invented anywhere?
According to the expert testimony at trial, the equipment was not available. The steam shovels necessary to remove the overburden.
Strip mining, but no, that doesn't answer my question. Was strip mining simply completely unknown, like nuclear fission, or was it just in this area or this type of land or what have you, strip mining wasn't feasible?
If strip mining was not feasible, there was...
It was used for stone, wasn't it, as early as 1903?
Yes. What you had when coal as well was what they call outcropping, where the coal actually rose to the surface or in a wall would be visible and could be mined for use at what they call outcropping.
Yeah, strip mining just hadn't been applied to coal as of 03, had it?
That is correct, because, again, you did not have the mechanical equipment to do it at that time.
Anywhere or just in Indiana?
Anywhere. You're talking about technology not yet having advanced to that degree. Now, the court, we believe, took a close look at the 1903 deed and correctly identified those limitations on the use of the surface.
What do you think the word, what force should be given to the term all coal?
Well, Your Honor, my personal opinion is Muchman is improperly decided in that it tries to apply a purpose instead of go to the intent of the grantors. But Muchman is what it is, and it says all coal in and of itself, by itself, includes later developed strip mining. However, it did say if the deed's ambiguous, you go further. And then the trial court did correctly find this deed to be ambiguous because of the limitations in it, both on the use of the surface and damages.
In the Muchman, first Muchman case, though, the deeds that were found ambiguous were the ones that required payment for crop damage.
Yes.
And ones where damage to the surface was totally precluded, correct?
Limitations on the use of the surface, yes. And, of course, and it's either or. The word or is used.
But wasn't it interpreted by the second Muchman case as really only finding ambiguity if there was a total preclusion of surface damage, not just a limitation to damage of part of the surface?
Well, that is not the way I interpret Muchman 2, which reiterated almost word for word the test of Muchman 1, which is expressly limits the use of the surface or provides for damages to use of the surface. So in that respect, the deed clearly, as found by the trial court, ambiguous and with extrinsic evidence, none of which has been challenged by the coal companies, no finding of fact has been raised as being clear error, went back, looked at the time, looked at the deeds, looked at the mechanics, took the expert testimony, and in very detailed findings came to the conclusion that this deed in 1903 could only be underground. And as a result, the only rights to the surface appurtenant would be for underground mining. And that deals not only with the request for injunctive relief, but also, in a very simple and elegant statement, deals with the request for specific performance. Because how can you have specific performance if it's just an underground mine and only the rights pertinent to an underground mine? And not, as they offered 1 month before the bench trial, $30 an acre, which for my clients is less than $1,800. They have 57 acres. And the language, the finding, the $183 million is their determination of the value of the coal.
What about Mr. Kelly's suggestion that you could get the current surface, you know, market value of the land for your clients?
Not to my knowledge, ever in Indiana has someone tried to rewrite a contract. I have not researched it, but I suggest that there's a constitutional prohibition, perhaps both state and federal, against rewriting such a contract. Now, with that, we'd ask the court to affirm the trial court, and I yield the remainder of my time to Mr. McNamer.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. McNamer?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm David McNamer. I represent Mr. Alexander, who is present in the courtroom with us today. My issue in this case, Your Honors, is the federal and state statutes, which clearly prohibit surface mining or strip mining within 300 feet of an occupied dwelling.
Can I real quick just ask you something?
Sure,
bottom
ma'am.
Line about that. Because I just wasn't sure how the federal and Indiana law prohibiting strip mining within 300 feet of an existing house can help you. If, in fact, a court were to find that ALH can buy the land and house for $30 an acre, well, then it can simply destroy the house and avoid the prohibition. Isn't that right?
That could occur, yes, ma'am, if the court found in that way. We feel, one, the statute does apply because there is no restriction in the statute as to when these houses could be built or how old they are, etc. And this statute, as well as the Hodel case, clearly indicated...
But surely... Doesn't make any sense, because surely if you won the case, if you win this case, you're going to sell the land to Peabody, right?
And, if and the price
surely
is right,
you're
yes.
not suggesting that you can't sell the land to them so that they can tear down the house and do strip mining.
We absolutely could sell it, Your Honor. As I said,
right.
if the price
so
is right.
My claim is that they have a right to. Take over the property, then they destroy the house, and that eliminates the 300-foot rule, and they go ahead and mine.
That would at that point.
Yeah.
Our point is right now, until some arrangement is consummated, they don't have the right.
They claim that the arrangement is in that original deed, so that they're entitled to knock down the house.
Well, I disagree with them, obviously.
Well, I understand, but that's the argument about the scope of the deed and the applicability and, you know...
Because I disagree...
...and so on. It's not about this 300-foot...
No, I understand they have never put forth any defense to the 300-foot. In fact, I don't think they even responded.
It's not them, because, you know, they're not going to start mining until they knock the house down.
My other... point is, I don't think the rights, contrary to Mr. Kelly, have vested, because under future interests, they can't have conditions in an option or in any type of conveyance for a future interest, and clearly in this case there are conditions. One, they have to designate what part of the ground they want. Two, they have to pay for it. So there are conditions precedent to an exercise of an option in this case, and with conditions precedent,
well,
there is no vesting.
Is that this right of theirs in the deed that they claim, this is an appurtenant right, and therefore it isn't subject to the 21-year deadline.
I understand what they claim. I
well,
think they're incorrect.
What's wrong with that argument? Aren't these appurtenant rights allowed to be indefinite?
Not in my opinion, Your Honor, when they're conditional, because under the Indiana Rule Against Perpetuities, which is intended to enhance marketability of property, this clearly restricts marketability of property in that, as one of you pointed out, essentially they're saying they own the fee, and we would therefore have no control whatsoever of the surface. The court has no further questions. I will yield the rest of my time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr.
McNamer.
So, Mr. Kelly, we'll give you another minute.
I would like to make it clear that in order to surface mine this property, we do not have to buy the surface. Under Mutchman, if it is determined that we own all the coal, and if it is determined that there is no other provision that creates an ambiguity, we have the right to mine the coal by any means reasonably necessary. We don't have to own the surface. We go ahead, we surface mine, we turn the land back over to the surface owner, fully reclaimed. So we don't have to exercise.
You mean when you finish strip mining, you're going to restore the surface?
Absolutely, by law.
The land back to?
At the same level of productivity. 110, 150 bushels of corn per acre. We got to get it to that level. Even if we own the land, we got to do that. So we can
But you claim the right to own the land, to right to fee simple.
we claim the right to purchase an appurtenant right. That does not have, we do not have to have that.
You said you did have the right to buy the fee. Didn't you say that in your opening argument?
I don't. Truthfully, Your Honor, y'all were coming at me, and I don't remember.
So your position is you don't have the right to get a fee simple, just the right to strip mine, and then land goes back to, or the use of the land
either
goes
or.
Back to the...
It's either or, Your Honor.
What's either or?
We can either, the way this case is set up, we filed for a declaratory judgment that we have the right, we own all of the coal, and the deed's clear and unambiguous. Therefore, we have the right to mine by whatever means is reasonably necessary, called the implied right to mine. There is also here a agreement to sell. We sought to enforce that in addition
what,
to buy.
What agreement to sell? That's part of the what do you mean?
The agreement to sell is, with you call it option. I call it an agreement to sell. It's within the 1903 coal deed.
That's the agreement to sell the whole, to sell the property, not
sell
just...
The surface. Yes, yep. Your Honor.
Sell the surface. Okay, so...
We don't have to have that to be able to, have an implied right to mine.
But you do, but it is one of the things you're...
Yes, it is. And, but it's important to me to attempt to...
No, I understand. You want to separate them.
Yes, and at that point, the option to purchase is relevant to... Is there a provision in the coal deed which severely limits the use of the surface? Whether this option is valid or invalid, whether it's equitable or inequitable, it is a piece of evidence, if you will, that says these owners did not severely limit use of the surface. It has that import, regardless of whether it's enforceable. So under Muchman, it carries the day as to there being no provision in this coal deed that severely limits the use of the surface.
So you're saying that this deed does not limit surface rights?
It does not limit mining operations from using the surface. As a matter of fact, it expressly allows it.
It's such an easy question. Does it limit surface rights?
Does it severely limit?
Does the deed limit surface rights?
It does not severely limit use of the surface.
So you don't need the option, or you say you don't need to exercise the option?
We do not have to have. So we do not have to own the surface.
Correct, Your Honor. $30.
Correct, Your Honor. We do not have to own the surface.
You can still strip mine without owning.
Yes, Your Honor.
Without the $30.
Yes.
Well, why do you want to give them the $30 then?
Be truthful, Your Honor. I'm like any litigator. I'm carrying water on both shoulders. I'm not exactly certain as to how a court's going to end up with an implied right to mine. And under Muchman, I think we have the implied right to mine because there is no severe limitation on surface use in this coal deed.
So the deed did not limit surface rights when it allowed the coal company to damage the property but not to exceed 5 acres.
Your Honor, that's nothing more than we can't have subsidence except as to 5 acres.
Okay, so
I don't think
that's not a limit.
That's not a severe limit on surface use.
Okay.
And what about the rest?
What about it doesn't limit surface rights under any dwelling house now situated on said real estate? At
best, that's 5 acres. That is not a severe limit on the surface used in the terms of Muchman. And Muchman would say, Your Honor, when it reviewed these 5 sets, it came to only 2 that it said had a severe limit.
And it didn't limit surface rights, your deed, for the 5 acres surrounding the present buildings, quote unquote.
It limits it as to 5 acres, but not as to a severe limit.
So that's not a severe limit.
Not under Muchman, Your Honor.
The problem with there's a tension between your conception of Muchman, the first Muchman opinion, as establishing a severe limit rule, and the principle that what Muchman is about is an ambiguous deed, right?
Muchman is.
And another way to think about Muchman is if the deed is ambiguous, you can have extrinsic evidence to disambiguate it. evidence such as that in when this deed was granted, there was no feasible strip mining of coal. So I don't see how they go together, right? A severe limit rule is very different from saying, well, if the deed is ambiguous, doesn't seem to contemplate strip mining, so we'll look and see whether it might have contemplated it.
Mutchman would say, Your Honor, you can't look at that extrinsic evidence.
No, I don't think that's a tenable interpretation of Mutchman.
I guess I would beg to differ, Your Honor, and as a matter of fact, Mutchman found the vast majority of the 116 deeds in front of it clear and unambiguous as to the grant of all coal without any provision creating an ambiguity. And the language of that court at page 1082.
Well, you know, it's interesting, though. It doesn't say it's unambiguous. It says they don't even need to reach ambiguity. What they're looking at is what is needed to effectuate the conveyance.
I guess I would not.
That Mutchman 1 does not say those are ambiguous. Unambiguous, I'm sorry.
Mutchman 1 says 50% of the deeds in front of it are unambiguous, and it affirmed the trial court's entry of judgment, summary judgment, as to every deed but these two sets. And those two sets were the only ones that went back for Mutchman 2. So you've got the vast majority of the 160.
I don't disagree with the latter part of what you said, but I don't agree with you that Mutchman 1 said that those deeds, those three sets, were unambiguous.
I guess I would just say, Your Honor, I beg to differ with you. And they affirmed that very statement in Mutchman 2, where they said, we found the vast majority of these deeds were unambiguous in Mutchman 1, and that's why they then said the implied right to surface mine was decided in Mutchman 1. It's the law of the case, and you can't come back and relitigate it. And that's what they wanted to do in Mutchman 2, was relitigate whether the court in Mutchman 1 had litigated the implied right to mine. It couldn't have done that if it hadn't found those deeds unambiguous.
But Mutchman 1, dealing with a bunch of specific deals, deeds, characterizes them in various ways. They don't have our deed. They don't have our deed in front of them, right?
I'm sorry, they don't have...
Mutchman 1 didn't deal with this deed. It dealt with different deeds.
You mean...
And you think that Mutchman 1, you know, the Indiana court, decided all possible future questions involving all possible deeds.
No, Your Honor.
By laying down a rule that there has to be severe limitation. That's your view. They set down that rule. They, of course, don't say that that's a rule they're laying down, right?
They say on page 1082, northeast second, in the right-hand column, third paragraph down, when it starts talking about these deeds vary greatly. They are X, they are Y. But there are two sets.
It's in the left column, actually, not the right column.
Yeah, I get my left and right screwed up, Your Honor. Let me think.
But you're close.
You're right. It is the right-hand
column.
Look,
you're taking a it is very unfair to us judges to fasten on a particular sentence and say, oh, that's the rule, because the court wasn't saying that was the rule. It was describing a heterogeneous collection of deeds, and we have a different deed.
Your Honor,
this is not the statement of a rule of law.
It comes back to it.
This is not a statement of a rule of law.
It comes right back to that same principle. There has to be a standard.
It doesn't have to be severe limitation. That doesn't have to be the standard.
Not necessarily, but it
comes... You can make a big distinction between deeds issued at a time when strip mining was feasible and before it was feasible.
I am not...
I mean, your view is this deed had been made in the 18th century, it would still be governed by this so-called rule.
My answer, Your Honor,
that's unrealistic.
My answer, Your Honor, that question is yes.
Yes, that's your argument. Okay.
Yes, 18th century,
doesn't
16th
matter.
Century.
First century.
Yes.
Right, before mining.
And.
Before life.
Yeah,
sorry.
Well. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Callahan. And we thank Mr. McNamer and Mr. Kolb as well.